From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at news, politics, and more. I'm Michael Hiplin.
I'm Sarah Whites-Kotacek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Jacob Kaufman.
Ahead on this week's program,
Governor Asa Hutchinson weighs in on same-sex marriages and access to lethal injection drugs following recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions.
Arkansas soldiers attacked outside a recruiting office in 2009 are finally awarded with Purple Hearts.
A topping-off ceremony was held for Little Rock's historic Robinson Auditorium, marking a key phase in the renovation.
The controversy over Confederate imagery throughout the South's public spaces continues for another week, with rallies scheduled for the birth of another nation.
Those stories are just ahead from KUAR News. It's been more than a decade since Arkansas has carried out a lethal injection. That's because of an ongoing battle over drugs being used in the process. Well, we had a Supreme Court ruling from Washington on Monday, and Governor Asa Hutchinson said it has prompted him to review options for Arkansas to potentially renew carrying out the death penalty. Sarah, you spoke with the governor about this. What is he thinking at this point?
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled on Monday that a set of Oklahoma prisoners who had argued that the drug midazolam was going to cause excessive pain and that the state shouldn't be able to continue with executions using that drug. They ruled against that and decided that if states can't access appropriate injection drugs, that would in effect make the death penalty impossible. And because that can't happen, states should be able to use what they can. And they decided this drug midazolam, which is a sedative, not a barbiturate, which would slow down the process of dying, was okay. So for Arkansas's governor, that opens up his options in terms of drugs to use. The state is set to use a barbiturate called phenobarbital, although it's been going through the process of its own litigation about what drugs to use in the state through the state Supreme Court. So the governor said, while the state's not quite ready to resume executions, which, as you said, haven't happened for 10 years, this definitely broadens the prospects of what they could start doing.
And obviously with the Supreme Court ruling that this particular drug is appropriate, I think that helps overall in deciding the issue and allowing the states that to proceed with lethal injection in the appropriate cases.
Any reaction from attorneys who represent people on death row in Arkansas? Jeff Rosenzweig has been vehemently against resuming the process. And Sarah, there have been a lot of cases where you've had inmates who have had all kinds of things go wrong and clearly suffered pain in the process, as these drugs have not actually put the inmates to death as quickly as had been expected. Any reaction at this point from those representing those on death row?
Michael, I know the state Supreme Court a few months ago ruled that the state could proceed with lethal injections of about several dozen inmates who are waiting on death row and had been using a three-drug combination before, and the state ruled that that's actually all right. And Jeff Rosenzweig was representing those inmates and said that, you know, this use of drugs is cruel and inhumane. But the issue is that for several years now, most of the producers of drugs that would be the fastest and most efficient coming from Europe are unwilling to sell to the United States anymore. They're actually, you know, either for ethical or legal reasons, don't want to facilitate executions.
Well, there used to be back when they had the electric chair, back when it was Arkansas Power and Light, they would actually cut off power to the prison before an inmate was put to death using the electric chair, just so they were in no way liable or had any involvement. Their electricity wasn't actually used in the process of killing an inmate. But you're right, it is something that pharmaceutical companies, especially those in Europe, have been weighing in on, saying that their drugs should be used to help people, not to execute people. Well, Jacob, I know that during this past legislative session, you had some lawmakers who said, well, if we can't get the drugs needed for this, they actually discussed other alternatives for putting inmates to death.
Yeah, and I was thinking a little bit, since we're in the studio, a little bit before the last session, back when we had two Republicans running for attorney general, and there was a runoff election between David Sterling and Leslie Rutledge, they sat in the studio debating the same issue. And before the Supreme Court ruling, still a lot of questions, of course, about what kind of drugs to use. And David Sterling was really adamant. He ended up losing the primary contest pretty narrowly after drawing a runoff. And he said, well, we're going to find another way to execute people, and that could be the electric chair. That could mean exempting the drug laws from Freedom of Information Act requests so that companies wouldn't have to necessarily be worried about being liable for that sort of thing. And the governor's nephew, Jeremy Hutchinson, who's pretty prominent in the judiciary in the Senate, he's called for such things too, saying regardless of our access to these kind of drugs or what the Supreme Court finds legal, we're going to find a way to put inmates to death who have been sentenced to death.
At the same time, I believe in the last session there was a bill to eliminate the death penalty entirely, and it nearly passed out of committee.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting one. It passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. It didn't make it much further, so it's kind of an anomaly, and it passed within a few days of another bill that allowed more family members to witness an execution of someone whose family member is victimized. So it was interesting. In the House, they tried to make it so that more people could watch an execution, while in a Senate committee, they tried to end executions. One of the major votes on that was from Senator David Burnett, and he's actually the judge that was in charge of the West Memphis 3 case. So it's really interesting to see him kind of say, you know what, I've been trying these cases my whole life. I think we should probably make it illegal.
Well, it will be an ongoing battle. Sarah, also when you spoke with the governor on Monday, he talked about the gay marriages that have been going on. It was a week ago today, as we record this on Friday, that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that same-sex couples should be allowed to get married. What did the governor tell you?
Michael, as you, I'm sure you remember last week, Governor Asa Hutchinson issued a statement immediately following the Supreme Court decision saying that all state clerks should comply and issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. On Monday when I spoke with him, he reiterated that, and he also added a sort of nuanced message to that written statement, which was that he anticipates many clerks will have conscientious objections to the ruling, and some may decide not to issue marriage license, which would require them to leave their jobs or undergo a court case.
Yeah, and we did have one clerk who said she was going to step down from her position because she didn't want to grant same-sex licenses. Well, let's listen quickly to what the governor said.
This is up for every county clerk to, you know, determine under their own conscience. And what I mean by that is they have a duty to follow the law. Obviously, if someone cannot follow that duty, that's a decision for them to make.
So the Cleburne County clerk did actually resign on Tuesday, and the Randolph County clerk is saying that she's weighing whether she'll resign. Yell County clerk said she considered resigning but decided to stay because in the end it wouldn't change anything. And this is part of a trend among southern states this week. In Oklahoma, Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, clerks have resigned. And actually in Texas, the attorney general gave explicit written permission for clerks to not issue same-sex marriage licenses. So this is contentious at the moment. Linda Barnett is a Grenada County clerk in Mississippi. She spoke with Sean Hannity, and this is her explanation for why she decided to leave her job.
I strongly believe in the Bible and that God is the final authority, and just because man chooses to live this way or say we have to do this and follow the laws, make the laws, and it just goes against everything I believe, my core values, everything I believe in.
And Chris, you have done some polling on your own, talking to clerks in some of Arkansas's larger counties. How many marriages at this point, from what you've heard, have been conducted?
As we're taping this, we called up this morning several county clerk's offices. Myself and our intern, Clary Farsley, who's sitting here observing or recording this podcast. We called the 10 most populous counties in the state just to get a sense of how many same-sex marriage licenses have been issued since last Friday. And of those, we determined a little over 90 same-sex marriages have been licensed here in the state in those 10 counties. About 92. Craighead County was the only one that didn't quite know. They said it was either 10, 11, or 12. They couldn't quite determine based on their numbers. They didn't have the software that could easily tell them. But in Pulaski County, since last Friday, 111 total marriages. Of those, 36 licenses were gender neutral. Other major counties, Benton County, there were 10 same-sex marriages. In Washington, there were 11. The other remaining ones in that group of 10, is really just a handful in each. I think what these numbers reflect is that there's not as much of a sense of urgency with this U.S. Supreme Court ruling with same-sex couples to go out and get married, as we saw when Pulaski County Judge Chris Piazza ruled the state ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional last year when, you know, over the course of 2 or 3 days, I believe there were over 500 same-sex couples getting married before the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, issued a stay.
So perhaps people actually taking time to work with their family and organize a formal marriage.
Yeah, perhaps. And we'll find out the official numbers on the total amount of same-sex marriage licenses that have been issued in the state. Every month, the county clerks around the state have to submit their numbers to the Arkansas Department of Health's Office of Vital Records. They collect those numbers once a month, and I believe it's on the 10th.
6 years after two U.S. Army privates were shot outside a Little Rock recruiting center, and after a lot of effort by members of Arkansas's congressional delegation, on Wednesday we had a ceremony at the state capitol. That's where they were awarded Purple Hearts. Chris, you covered this story this week. As I mentioned, this has been a long battle, and of the two who were shot, one of the soldiers died, the other survived. And give me a little background first. These two men were apparently targeted because they were members of the U.S. military.
Yeah, back in 2009, U.S. Army privates William Long, who went by the name Andy, and Quentin Izaguela, both from Central Arkansas. They had just completed basic training a couple weeks before, had the opportunity to work at a recruiting center on Rodney Parham here in Little Rock. They were outside taking a smoke break, actually, and someone pulled up in a car and opened fire on them. They were both shot several times. William Long perished. Izaguela suffered injuries, but was able to recover, although he still has some bullets lodged in his body as a result. The assailant, who went by the name Abdul Hakim Muhammad, had been living in Little Rock for a couple of months. He was working for his father's touring company. His father, based out of Memphis. Abdul Hakim Muhammad originally went by the name Carlos Bledsoe. That was his birth name. He's from Tennessee, grew up in Nashville. When he was a teenager, early 20s, he started visiting a mosque, got involved in the Islamic community, converted to Islam. Eventually, became more radical as the years went by. He traveled to Yemen, lived there for several months, overstayed his visa, was actually investigated by the FBI and interviewed. And his story is one that is a case study in how people can be radicalized through religious extremism. But aside from that, he came back to the United States and decided he wanted to target U.S. military members. So after a couple of failed tries, he had scoped out a couple other sites in different states. There were no incidents there. He was living in Little Rock and went to this Army recruiting site and took a rifle and shot these two guys. That incident in 2009 precursed a later, much more gruesome shooting in 2009 at Fort Hood in Texas, where I believe there were at least 14 casualties. Congressional members from Arkansas and Texas at the time and those family members of those victims were taken aback, I guess, by the fact that the people who were injured in those attacks were not eligible for Purple Hearts. The attacks were classified as workplace violence under U.S. Army rules. So it took several years before this moment occurred. Earlier this year, language was put into the National Defense Authorization Act, allowing for them to be eligible for Purple Hearts. And at the ceremony, Quentin Izaguela's family, Darris Long, William Long's father, spoke about the kind of lobbying efforts that he had to engage in over the last several years with congressional members and the media to get the case of William Long to the point where they were eligible for Purple Hearts. And here's what he had to say about that.
I was always in contact with our elected representatives. Don't let it slide, don't let it slide. And there's a lot of people who felt, oh, this will never happen. You know, and I had faith that something would happen. It wouldn't be me doing it. Like I said, how do you move a mountain, a rock at a time? I'm not going to move that mountain. There's a lot of people who are involved that had to do it.
Yeah, so it took a lot of letter writing, phone calls. Darris Long gave congressional testimony, and all that led to this moment.
Yeah, and one of the key players involved in fighting for this was then-Congressman Tim Griffin, who at that time represented Arkansas's 2nd Congressional District, now Lieutenant Governor. But Jacob, you spoke with him about this and his thoughts on what led up to this.
Yeah, and Congressman Griffin, he's interested for a number of reasons, of course, because it's a tragedy that happened in his district. He's intimately tied to the role of trying to change the definition of who's eligible for a Purple Heart, allowing an American soldier who was killed by someone who's not wearing a uniform necessarily on American soil. But he talked a little bit about the process and what he's been going over the past few years. And he's, of course, a military veteran, so this rings home to him especially.
Let's be real clear. The convicted murderer did not fire upon the two soldiers because he knew them and had an argument with them. He fired upon them as he indicated. Why? Because they were wearing the uniforms. That's why he fired upon them. Fired upon them because they were members of the United States Armed Forces. That, by definition, is a terrorist act. There was an international component to this. The accused murderer traveled abroad, changed his name, sought out guidance in the Middle East, Yemen, I believe. And so this was an international terrorist attack. I argued that throughout my time in Congress. I am appreciative to the delegation for continuing to push this after I was gone, and it's the right thing to do.
And Griffin is not just a veteran of several recent conflicts. He's still in the National Guard, and for anyone who's wondering and who's driving through West Little Rock, those Army recruiting stations are still there.
Yeah, and this was This story, I actually covered it, went out there to the recruiting center after this happened, and initially it wasn't clear that there was any kind of military aspect to this, that there was someone who had been radicalized. Initially, it was this an attempted robbery? It just seemed like, well, maybe this was just another crime, but it's one of those instances where the more we learned about it, and what this became, that it became much more important for officials to see that these two did get this honor.
Yeah, and Abdul Hakim Muhammad wasn't charged with any terrorism. He was prosecuted in Pulaski County Circuit Court and charged with capital murder. He's now currently serving a life sentence for the crime. But that was also an issue that a lot of the families, and I think congressional members, would have liked to have seen him prosecuted under terrorism charges in federal court, but that didn't happen.
Well, on to a lighter story. We had an event this week marking 1 year since the renovation of Little Rock's historic Robinson Auditorium began. It was a topping out ceremony where officials came out on the anniversary that the auditorium was closed to sign what will be the final steel beam put in place on the expanded structure. This has been watched by a lot of people. The auditorium is home to the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra. It's a nearly $70 million project being funded with a 2% tourism tax. And there are high hopes for what this will become, a really good performing arts center for Little Rock. So a lot of people watching this, and you had officials and other guests come out to take part in this ceremony. Gretchen Hall, president and CEO of the Little Rock Convention and Visitors Bureau, is overseeing the project and told the crowd that Wednesday's event marks an exciting milestone for the renovation.
Today's topping out marks an exciting milestone. Those of us close to the project have a complete understanding of the actual complexity of this design and all of the challenges of protecting our historic exterior and protecting the historical significance of this project while basically gutting the entire interior to provide a world-class performing arts center and an expanded brand new conference center on the north side.
And some listeners of this podcast may remember that we had an extended look at the renovation a few weeks ago. But as we mentioned then, all the seats, balcony, different floors have all been ripped out, and crews are essentially starting from scratch inside the shell of this building. Little Rock Mayor Mark Stodola noted that there had long been complaints about the sound of the old auditorium, but offered assurances that this project will be worth the cost, as I said, $70 million in tax dollars from this 2% tourism tax.
This is a transition of a building into the 21st century that's going to live long beyond most of us. And it is a new beginning, a not only a restoration, but a true transformation of a wonderful facility into one of the finest performing arts buildings that will be in the United States.
And officials also said that the project is on schedule and is within budget. It's scheduled to reopen in November of 2016. On to the subject of Common Core, which is the educational standards that many have been fighting. There's a committee appointed by the governor, led by Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin, that has been studying the Common Core standards. And Jacob, Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin had suggested he might have recommendations as early as this week. We've already, as we mentioned last week, had the recommendation to do away with the park test. But Griffin had thought maybe he could have a full slate of recommendations out this week. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Yeah, and this dates back to June 8th when Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin told the joint meeting of both the House and Senate Education Committees that, you know, he's really confident about his recommendations, really gung-ho about it. This is back when he said, we're going to get rid of the PARC test and we're going to replace it with ACT Aspire test. That didn't quite happen necessarily. PARC is gone, but that recommendation for that ACT test still hasn't come to fruition. But I spoke to Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin a little bit about it. He said, really, the reason for the delay is just a mundane scheduling issue. All the members supposedly wanted to switch from a teleconference call to an in-person meeting. So not the most nefarious excuses, perhaps, but he said we're still going to get these recommendations in well in advance of the governor's fall deadline, even if it didn't make his June expectation.
I would like to see the testing issue settled before we engage in another debate, but that's just my personal preference. That is not related to the, as far as I know, the council members' desire.
He mentioned he would like to have the testing issue resolved. That's the biggest debate in Common Core right now in the state. But he says that is not the reason for the recommendations not coming in at the end of June.
There's a July 1st deadline to terminate the contract with PARC for next year. It had been implemented in the state just in 1 year. And while Griffin and other legislators who pushed for the end of PARC had advocated to contract with ACT and ACT Aspire, the State Board of Education refused to do that under the conditions of there not being an open contract bid. So the governor has asked the Education Commissioner Johnny Key to go back to the State Board and start working on this open bid. The State Board has a meeting next week, so it's possible that this could get underway and definitely needs to be resolved this summer in order to have a test in place for next year and to give school districts the time to actually implement their testing, given that they're going to be switching for the third year in a row to a new test.
So, Jacob, we're heading into the holiday weekend, the 4th of July. But after the shooting in South Carolina, which we talked about a week ago, has brought a lot of attention to the Confederate flag, and you've had a lot of people removing it on this national holiday. We're also going to have people kind of making a counter demonstration here, standing up for the Confederate flag. What's planned?
Yeah, there was a Confederate flag waving rally in a place we might expect it, Harrison, Arkansas, earlier this week. So not too unusual necessarily to have that kind of a showing in that city. But also on the 4th of July or this 4th of July weekend, there'll be Confederate flag waving rallies, which organizers have intentionally intermixed with the cause of what they call Christian marriage, which would be opposed to same-sex marriage in Russellville, Dardanelle, and also in Harrison again. And so the causes between each person participating in this rally could range from, hey, this is a rebel flag, this is I am a racist, to I'm a secessionist. It's hard to see in the minds of everyone at these rallies. But I asked a few state representatives if they could read into the minds of their constituents. And here's one, Ron McNair. He's a state representative, a Republican from North Arkansas. Part of his district includes parts of Harrison, and he commented on it a little bit.
I don't know that I would want to comment on it right now, especially in the light of everything. I know people have different opinions on it, and you know, like a lot of other things that you look at. The flag actually represents what you make of it to me. But as far as the rallies and stuff, I personally don't have an opinion on that right now. You know, the flag doesn't mean anything to me other than, you know, heritage. But I realize other people see that differently.
And I also spoke with David Meeks, who would be more pertinent to the rally going on in Conway. It's going to be an overpass over the interstate, so hopefully everyone driving on I-40 would see it, is the idea behind that. And another Republican state representative, David Meeks, he had similar answers to McNair, but gave a little bit more clarification on his personal viewpoint.
I know that there are a lot of people who look at the Confederate flag and you know, think of the racist overtones, but there are a lot of folks who think of it more as Southern heritage and don't bring in the racist component to that particular flag.
And yourself included?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any harm in it at all, but I can understand why some people are upset, you know, about the flag being flown.
And while David Meeks, and Representative Ron McNair both say, well, you know, it's maybe I understand why it could be objectionable to some people. They think it's heritage. They think it's history. But clearly other people that maybe don't get as much airtime, I spoke with the head of Arkansas's NAACP chapter, Dale Charles, earlier today about something else. And he told me basically, sure, it's history. Sure, it's heritage. But it's a part of our history that is an ugly history that we shouldn't celebrate.
And just to add on to that, there's a recent effort in Little Rock to change the name of Confederate Boulevard, which where the Little Rock National Cemetery is, to get rid of that name. And City Director Kathy Webb is helping out with that. And some area business people have commented to the local news channels that they don't see the need for it. So there's a debate ongoing here in Little Rock as well.
Yeah. And Chris?
Yeah, I actually spoke this morning with a woman who's leading the petition to change that name, Dr. Anika Whitfield. She lives along, I mean, Confederate Boulevard, it part of it was changed to Springer Boulevard a few years ago. And it's in a predominantly African-American community in Southeast Little Rock. And she feels, and I think a lot of the residents in that area feel that it ought to be changed because of it, you know, the heritage and history that represents this, you know, predominantly one of oppression and racism, one could venture to say. And part of the process of that is they have to get signatures in favor from over 50% of the residents and businesses along that stretch of road in order to submit it before the city board and the planning commission in order for it to get approval. And they want to change it to the name of Springer Boulevard.
And while we're mentioning Confederate symbolism throughout Little Rock, also when I spoke to Daryl Charles, and hopefully we'll have more on it during next week's podcast, I took him by two Confederate monuments on the Capitol grounds, and he said he'd seen them before, but not really ever that up close, and he finds them pretty objectionable and said they should go. But we'll find out next week.
Okay, well, that's a tease to it. So from the Confederate flag to the red, white, and blue, the American flag will be flying proudly this weekend on this 4th of July holiday. Thanks for listening to our podcast. I'm Michael Hiplin.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotacek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
You can subscribe to the program if you're not already a subscriber on iTunes. You can also offer your feedback, news@kuar.org. KUAR is an editorially independent service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. Thanks for listening.